All Eyes on Fishing with Mitch Peterson, Josh Sheldon, and Brad Qualley, leading you to the next level.
Hey everybody, welcome back to All Eyes on Fishing. We're going to have a great episode tonight. Tonight's going to be our first night that we have a guest on. We have Dan Swanson as our guest, and we're going to be going over some fish finder stuff, you know, what you have and what's going to make you successful. Dan is a Lowrance guy, so he's going to dive into that for us.
So Dan Swanson is a former PWT pro where he fished all over. He was PWT or co-PWT Rookie of the Year, and I'm not sure what year that was. I can't remember, but I'm sure Dan can fill us in. Dan is also a guy who has been a Lowrance pro for, gosh, as long as I've known him. And Dan is, I would say, probably the most knowledgeable Lowrance guy west of the Mississippi, at least.
At least everybody in our
seems
eyes.
To turn to him.
pretty good.
So I know Dan spends a lot of his time going to the Bass Pro, Cabela's, and the different stores to talk about Lowrance, and he's a Lowrance guy, but he knows a lot about other sonars. But I know that he's a great resource, and Dan does an excellent job in setting up boats and building boats and stuff like that. Not only that, but he's fished a ton of tournaments, and we fished tournaments together for years and years. And so we're going to talk a little bit Lowrance fish finders, and then when we get a chance, we're going to go over to the next level, and we're going to continue our talk with Dan about fishing tournaments and pre-fish and day one and all those kind of good things. So
we'll probably get into a little in-depth in Lowrance.
Yeah, too. A little more in-depth.
So, yeah.
All right, Dan, welcome to All Eyes on Fishing podcast.
Thanks, guys. I'm glad to be here.
So did I – what was the year that you were the PWT co-rookie of the year?
You want me to give away my age? Is that the plan?
Well, I was going to tell him your age. I was going to say Dan was out fishing tournaments with Jesus, but I didn't want to, you know.
Dan invented the fishing tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the first called Dan tournament.
Yeah, Dan was the first guy to fish a walleye tournament on the Red Sea.
Me and Mike McClellan. It was 2004.
2004, and just so everybody knows, I bought the PWT 2004 disc set, and yep, Dan's on there. I couldn't believe it. Nice. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Dan, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do now? I know you're a guide and a guide in Northern Colorado, and you are sponsored and represent a lot of different companies. So why don't you go into a little bit of that?
Yeah. So right now, I'm a fishing guide for Fishful Thinker. If anybody watches the Fishful Thinker TV show, that's Chad LaChance, and I work for him. I do the majority of the guiding for the company while he focuses on TV. The lakes that I'm permitted to guide on are Horsetooth Reservoir, Glendo in Wyoming. I do Carter Lake and also Boyd Lake, all in Colorado.
Excellent. And if, for people who don't know who Chad LaChance and Fishful Thinker are, Chad has a show that's on Altitude Sports. And if you don't get Altitude Sports, he's on YouTube and a couple other outlets. He's a Berkeley pro. So, and Dan is a Berkeley pro as well.
Yes. Berkeley and Abu, as well as my Lowrance connection, Ranger Boats, Evan Rude.
All the good stuff.
All the fun toys.
All the stuff that a guy needs.
And to give you guys a little background on Dan, Dan always was the guy that I would fish with who had the great, you know, the 620 and all the different series of 620s or 619s, depending on what he felt like that year. And he's always the guy that pulled out of the water and had the boat with the big motor and everybody come look at. So Dan is one of the walleye fishermen who have switched recently to a bass boat. And so Dan is currently running, what are you running, Dan? The 522?
I'm running a 520.
520. So so he is, you know, taking that walleye
step,
game to the next level. So
you know, that's interesting to me, Dan. Why did you make the switch?
I've got some future plans, but I wanted to try one out just to see how much I liked it. Everybody talks about running these boats, and I love my 620s. I've had them forever, and I thought, well, let me give a bass boat a try for a year. And I figured out how to troll out of it. I've got rod holders rigged up on the back. I took some of the crappie stuff and mounted on the back, so my boat looks like a backwards crappie boat.
There you go. Yeah, I bet it does.
So, Dan, couple things. Give us two of the biggest things that you see that are common mistakes that people could change when they're working with, you know, either mounting their graphs or they're getting them zeroed in. I see you answer a lot of people's questions on the Ranger Facebook page where, you know, you answer their questions for them as far as, oh, I can't get this to look right or that to look right. What are two big ones that you see and you know that need to be corrected?
Well, the biggest thing, I think number one, is the power connections. People don't pay enough attention to the kind of power that they're getting up to their units. And when people are saying that, oh, my unit's turning off and on, it's not doing this, it's not doing that, it's really related to having a bad power connection. So knowing what voltage things are working at. So the second one would be how their transducers are mounted. So oftentimes they'll mount it where they're getting cavitation from the bottom of the boat or from too close to the motor. Or it comes out of the water when they're running down the lake. The third thing is just not knowing how to use it. So learning how to set your sensitivity is key.
I think I got all those issues.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brad, you know, Brad, it's funny that you were talking about no power to the unit.
I'm taking notes here, Dan.
Yeah, Brad experienced that when he turned 50. So so we just want to make sure that we know what you're talking about so we can help him. But so, Dan, when you mount a transducer, give me a good spot and how you would do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there, Dan, and I think it's confusing. So this is a good question.
Yeah, so mounting the transducer is really important. First of all, if you have a fiberglass boat, one of the things you can do is mount your 2D transducer. That's the, you know, the standard puck or the skimmer transducer that we're all used to seeing mounted on the backs of boats. In a glass boat, you can actually shoot through the hull by epoxying it in the far back of the hull. That'll give you a great clean signal. You don't get any cavitation or noise. If you've got an aluminum boat or a flatback boat, you'd want to mount that on the back of the boat, about a foot and a half to 2 feet from the main motor. And I do recommend strongly that you get a mounting board. They're like about a foot long and 4 inches high. Got a couple of screws in it. They're made out of a plastic. You mount that on the back. Then when you mount your transducer, if you make a mistake, you can still move it without drilling more holes in your boat.
Yeah. So how do you mount those? Would you mount one of those boards? Is that just epoxied on then?
No, well, you can get the epoxy on boards. There are some that are available. I use the one that's got a couple screws in it. So I do drill a couple holes in the boat, mount the board where I want it, and once it's mounted, then I seal the whole thing with silicone.
Okay.
And then you put your transducers into the mounting board.
Right, and then I mount my transducer into the mounting board, and that way I can move it to the right or the left or up and down. The things that you do run into when you mount a transducer, you really need to have clean water flowing over the face of it when you're on plane. So you've got to look for, if you've got a boat that's got rivets in it, you can't mount it in front of those rows of rivets that run lengthwise down the hull. You also need to watch out for the running strakes. That's those metal tabs that keep the boat going straight when you're going down the lake. So
kind of like the V things on the bottom.
Well, the V on the bottom is the keel, and you probably don't want to be mounting it there anyway.
No, I'm talking about the small ones.
Yeah, the small ones on the side. Those are called strakes. And then when you get on the far right and left side of the boat, you'll have a flat spot that's called the chine, and you don't want to be on that chine either. Any of those kinds of things will cause disturbed water. And if that disturbed water goes over the face, the sound signal coming out of the transducer reflects off of it, and you get a bad looking signal on the screen.
And when you are running the wires, because that I have broken many a knuckles trying to do that. When you do that, you and I have talked in the past, and you mentioned how fuses are just a huge part of this.
Yeah. So ideally, what you want to do is you want to connect your power directly to the starting battery. Do not use the trolling motor battery. Okay, so we'll start there. The trolling motor battery, the way the speed is determined by the battery, the motor, it's got pulses that come out. And those pulses are what determine how fast the motor's running. Okay, all those pulses send out interference, and it gets picked up by the signal or by the wires on the fish finder. Okay.
Gotcha.
So if you're connected to the trolling motor battery, you're going to get those that noise. If you've run it, if you've got it connected to the starting battery, then you have to have a fuse. Since you mentioned the fuse, you don't want to blow things up if you have a fire, or you don't want to start a fire. So you'll get the best battery voltage connecting directly to the starting battery. And then use heavy enough
and
wire.
And then after... Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. What gauge would you suggest? Because I see that's a very common question that you answer.
Yeah, it depends a lot on how far you're going to run it. I mean, you can't go wrong with 12-gauge wire. It's probably plenty for a fish finder. These days, you know, some of these units have got a lot of, they use a lot of juice. And so running a heavier wire is going to help a lot. Now, some of the boats, like some of the Rangers, the newer Rangers, they run pretty heavy wire up to the terminal blocks that are underneath the console. And in some cases, you can get away with connecting to that rather than running to the battery.
Okay. And so let's say we get it all connected, everything is in the right spot, and we're getting good signal, and we get out onto the water. Is there anything you do to set up your graph that, I wouldn't say different, but, you know, do you leave everything factory, or do you start to mess with maybe ping or any of these other things?
So I run my ping speed at whatever the factory defaults are generally. And as far as the scroll speed on the screen, I might play around with that. If I'm running fast down the lake, I want my scroll speed to be a maximum so I'm spreading out the sound signals as much as I can, rather than having really short pulses when you're going over suspended fish, for example. So it'll be easier to see.
Okay.
If I run it too fast and I'm just sitting in a spot, that may scroll off the screen before I actually see it. So maybe I'll mess with it. But generally, I run it on factory defaults for the most part.
They've probably determined that that's a pretty good average.
Yeah, it's a pretty good average. And it's the same with a lot of the new units. The new Lowrances, the auto sensitivity works extremely well. Some of the older units, it doesn't work so well. And then some other brands that I won't talk about, some of their auto sensitivity doesn't work so well. So one of the things that you need to learn how to use when you start looking at images on your screen is adjusting the sensitivity. And the sensitivity, what that's doing is turning up the volume on your sonar. It's not turning up the power that's going out to the transducer. It's actually turning up the receive signal, kind of like a radio station that's a long, long ways away. When you turn up the volume on the radio, you're not turning up the power at this radio station. You're just turning up the volume at your radio.
Speaker.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, but you will start picking, you'll pick up noise. The more you turn that up, the more noise you're going to pick up, as well as more signal.
So, that makes sense.
So what you want to do is if you're not seeing fish on your sonar, well, either there's no fish or the sonar is just not picking them up. So if you start turning up your sensitivity, you'll start to see objects that will arch that may be buried in the weeds, or maybe they're in a bunch, maybe the water's dirty and it's got a bunch of algae in it. You may have to crank it up to where the screen starts to get maybe a little dark, but you'll start to see some fish jump out at you.
Well, I know, Dan, I've played with my sensitivity before on my, because I run a couple of Lowrances too, and sometimes I don't know if there's a sweet spot, but I know that when I'm adjusting that sensitivity, sometimes it like almost clouds my screen with a bunch of other clutter. So there's got to be a fine point on that. Now, is the sensitivity turned up more when you're running faster, is what you're saying?
No, not so much. I think it's when I'm working in an area where I've got let's pick a lake that's got some weeds in it, and I've got fish in the weeds. Right, my signal is bouncing off the weeds, and they're coming back as a reddish cloud of stuff. Right, if I can turn up my sensitivity a little bit, it might turn that reddish weeds may turn a little bit, start to get a little bit of yellow in them. Right, so with Lowrance, just bring folks up to date. The palette I use: yellow is the hardest return, red is the next, and blue is least, and white is nothing. Okay, so when I say I turn it up, so I get some red, but if I have fish in there, I'm going to start seeing some yellow arches within those weeds. That's what I'm looking for, right? Or if I'm fishing really deep, let's say I'm lake trout fishing in 100 feet of water, I may have to turn up my sensitivity so I can see my jig on the bottom. That's where I want to be. If you really want to set it perfectly, let's say you're fishing 30 feet of water. if you put your sonar depth to manual and you set the depth to say 80 feet, okay, so it's more than double my depth. My depth is 30. If I start turning up my sensitivity, I'm going to see the bottom at 30 feet, but then down at 60, I'm going to see a, what they call a second bottom or a second echo. And when I turn that up and I start to get a little bit of color in that second echo, then my sensitivity is about where I want it to be for that depth. You need to change it back to auto depth at that point.
Cool.
Yeah. So what you're telling us is we need to turn the little fish signals off of Mitch's, right?
Well, you do need to do that. The cartoon, okay. The cartoon fish need to be turned off.
Yeah. Can I leave the beeper, though?
And, you know what? The guys that run that fish ID beeping every 4 seconds.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know how they do it.
It would drive me nuts.
Well, stop it. The thing you got to think about with that fish ID, that's a really key thing. Is that anything that is not attached to the bottom is going to give you a fish symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's a tree or an air bubble or a clump of algae, it's all going to say, oh, that's a fish.
That's the thing. These guys are trying to rip me, Dan, but I tell you, my sonar works better when I have it on fish ID.
Oh, yeah, you see a lot of fish.
He just can't catch them.
I just can't get them to bite.
Yeah. It's like you figure it out.
They're algae. Now you know it's just algae pods floating around. He's fishing the hell out of them.
Bubbles.
You can't say it's suckers or carp anymore.
Right. That's right. Well, and you know what? And that's kind of interesting because I have seen people ask you questions, and you and I have kind of go over this, but you kind of do have a way to be able to tell off the arches if it is, you know, carp or just based on the way the arch looks.
Yeah, somewhat. My experience with carp is the arch looks kind of rough. And I don't know if it's because the signal is reflecting off those giant scales or what it is. But carp, in general, I can tell what a carp looks like on the screen.
And kind of also get that half arch.
Well, a half arch can be caused by some other things, but if you get a really short fish and you're not moving very fast, it might, as opposed to another arch that's next to it, you could say, well, maybe that's a smallmouth bass or a shorter fish. You can't really tell the size of a fish on the size of the arch because the size of the arch is determined by how long was the fish in the cone of the transducer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay?
Right. So when I see these great big arches, I'm like, oh, yeah, here we come, baby. I've just been swimming under my cone for a while.
Yeah, it could be, or your scroll speed's really slow. But the thickness of the arch can tell you something about the fish.
Sure.
Right? If you get a thick arch and you got your sensitivity set up right and you get a bunch of yellow in it with maybe a little bit of red, you say, that's a pretty good-sized fish. But again, it depends on how your sensitivity is set up and how your color line is set up and a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. What helps me identify different fish is how they behave on the screen. So I know that smallmouth kind of look like this because of how they relate to each other. That just comes from experience.
Right. So if we're sitting there and we've got spot lock on and we're in one spot, let's say fishing slip bobbers, what's that going to look like when fish swim underneath my boat? On the graph.
Well, if they swim underneath your boat, you'll see the fish first show up on the edge of the transducer cone, and it'll show up as being a long ways away. Okay. It could be, let's say you're in 10 feet of water, you might see an arch that begins, you know, right at the bottom and then comes up to say 8 feet and then back down to the bottom again.
Okay. And will it be an arch or a line?
Well, if its fish is swimming through, it'll be a lot. It'll be an arch, right? Okay. Or if the boat's moving, it'll be an arch. Now, let's say you're ice fishing, so that'd be a better example, right? You've got the transducer stuck in a hole, and there's a fish sitting right underneath your transducer, and he never moves. You're going to see nothing but a straight line.
Got it.
All right, but it'll usually be a line just above the bottom or right suspended on, if they're
sure,
just
somewhere.
There.
Somewhere might be even be on the bottom, right? You might see the bottom might be yellow, and you've got this red thing right on top of the bottom. That's probably a fish. It may be a fish laying right on the bottom. Could be a weed. Could be weeds or something.
So that brings me to a question because we have guys ask us this all the time, and maybe you can shed some light on it, Dan. Too is when you're fishing, you see you're trolling bouncers or whatever you're doing, and you're going kind of slow, and you're seeing a bunch of those dark, they almost look like rock, but you know you're in sand or whatever, but they're just like hugged to the bottom. They look just like big, almost not boulders, but just hunkered in together.
Yeah,
a bunch of clumps. And sometimes I've thought, man, I think we're going over some rubble, but then we've caught fish there. So it's hard for me to differentiate what that is. What are you looking for on the bottom when you're doing a slow pull to help identify fish?
I'm looking for a change in color.
So that's the key is really is if you got a blue line bottom or whatever because for the bottom and you start seeing different colors, that's what your indication is.
Yeah, hopefully you're not seeing a blue line bottom. If you are, turn up your sensitivity.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Do you use your structure scan or your down scan to kind of help verify that?
Yeah, it'll help a lot. So if you're moving along and you do have down scan, and I generally run mine with my down scan and my regular 2D sonar on at the same time. So I'll get my color off of the 2D, and I'll have a yellow bottom, not a blue bottom. I'll have a yellow bottom.
And
if I've got yellow bumps on the bottom, it could be fish and it could be rocks, right? Mm-hmm. If it's got some red in it, then it might be a fish, or maybe I got the edge. If you catch the edge of a rock, it'll be red. But okay. If you've got your down scan setup, what you're going to see is the bottom, and you'll see little white dots off the, they're not attached to the bottom. They're just off the bottom. And those will typically be fish.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so, and as we're kind of getting close to the end of the original podcast here, tell us a little bit about side scan. I know side scan is one of those things that it can be very difficult for people to read or be able to identify fish on it. Maybe just give us a little overview of how you see fish, and because the rocks are obvious, right? I mean, they look like rocks. You can even see the shadows from the rocks, kind of. So how do you identify those fish out on the sides of your boat?
Well, if the fish are big enough, they look like fish. So I have a friend who's a guide in Florida, and he went over some tarpon, and it looks just like a tarpon. Wow. But they're, you know, that's a six foot long fish.
Right.
On a smallmouth bass or a walleye or something like that, and depending on what angle you hit it at, it could be just a bright white spot. And if the fish is large enough, it'll actually have a long elongated shape to it.
And the white spot will now be like a white, like,
yeah, it's pretty bright. Mm-hmm. And if the fish is up off the bottom, you'll actually see a shadow behind it on the side.
And is there anything special, Dan, that you do with, let's say, your GPS, especially all the new mapping that Lowrance and these other units have come out with lately? Is there anything special that, you know, you just want everybody to know that is super important to know about that is helpful?
About mapping?
About the mapping and the, you know, the different, because you, I mean, you are, for the people, they don't know that you are a mapping master when it comes to putting maps with these Lowrances. Is there anything that you would suggest with the way you can make them now and, you know, all the other new software they're coming out with?
Yeah, I think that every model, I mean, whether it's Humminbird or Lowrance or Garmin, you can make maps as you go. So they have live mapping available to you. It's really important to those places where you don't have good maps. But if you're doing it with Lowrance, they have it's called a Genesis Live Overlay. You turn that on. The other thing you should be doing anytime you're making a map with Lowrance is to be logging data at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then when you get home, you can upload that to genesismaps.com, and it'll turn it into a permanent map for you.
Now, how do you get that back onto your unit? Is it just an update then, or a SD card? Or?
Yeah, you have to create an account on genesismap.com when you upload your map. Once the map is created, they have a social map program where lots of people contribute to it. Creates mm-hmm. a nice map. Then you can log on. You can find the lake you like, and you can download the map to a chip, and then plug that into your sonar. And then select that lake, and you're good to go. And the more people that upload that stuff, the better those lakes are going to get.
Well, that's really taking it to the next level, and we're going to get to the next level here in just a minute. But one thing I wanted to make sure that the folks that are listening today is I know you're guiding, but how can they get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is send me an email at dan at fishfulthinker.com. Fishful is FISHFULTHINKER.
.com.
Perfect.
That sounds like a great place to check out if you're looking for guide service. Dan, I've known Dan for a long time, and he's a good stick. He knows what he's doing. He's really going to help educate you out on the water and really get you on the fish and just show you what it takes to be successful. We're going to wrap up tonight. I really do want to appreciate all of us here from All Eyes on Fishing. Appreciate Dan taking the time to spend with us. But we're going to jump into the next level. So anybody that wants to go to the next level, you're subscribed to the next level. You could do that through All Eyes or through Podbean.com. And we're going to continue this conversation with Dan. We're also going to get into some tournament stuff that Dan does that makes him successful.
This has been All Eyes on Fishing. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, go ahead and subscribe to The Next Level. And you can hear longer podcasts and more information on all of your favorite topics. And check us out at alleyesonfishing.com for apparel, blogs, and other information. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. All Eyes on Fishing, leading you to the next level.